Hello, everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to the Front Row Flashbacks, a part of the Front Row Network and NPR Illinois Community Voices. I am Ryan Lutens, diehard horror fanboy and all-around Academy Awards snob.
I'm Jay Hoffman, master of the dad joke and interpretive dance.
And I'm Erin McCabe, the peacebringer and insightful mama hen of the show.
Here on Flashbacks, we like to get all nostalgia-like about the movies of our past. Movies from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that have shaped the way we look at cinema and pop culture today, and how those movies have given us insight and hope in our everyday lives.
So strap on your fanny packs.
Hold on to your butt.
And let's get ready to flashback. If you've ever had a Scottish, Egyptian, Spanish pimp tell you the key to being the most powerful being in the world is to cut the other dude's heads off, then you might be thinking about Highlander. Welcome back to Flashbacks, and in honor of St. Patrick's Day, we're going to celebrate a movie that has nothing to do with the Irish. We are looking at a film that's heavily in Scottish lore. We're going to be looking at Highlander. What a perfect way. Hey, no movie that has a real Irish accent, I don't know, Irish twist to it, does not have an anniversary. So we're going to look at Scotland. We're going to look at Highlander. Let's look and see who's here. Jay, how's it going, bud?
It's going well. It's going well. And you know what? Scottish, Irish, I don't, what's the difference?
But, you know, a lot of people
I'm
have
sure I just pissed off. Some people off, but I pissed Larry off. Whatever. Some mumbly accent, whatever.
And of course, our other great host is Erin. Erin, how's it going?
Erin McCabe, the yeah. Irish one.
Yeah. Well.
Today, this is my month of holidays. I got St. Patrick's Day and St. Joseph's. St. Joseph's Day, the Italian holiday.
What's St.
Joseph's? That is what we sound like on St. Joseph's Day.
You sound like me. Are you okay?
I watched a lot of Highlander today, so I pulled out a White Claw because I got a lot of opinions.
So you have a lot of muddled accent that has no. Yeah.
That's yeah, I wanted Highlander, to stay consistent right. With all of the films and the TV series.
Yeah, got it. You're doing it quite well. We have a guest host with us tonight, our very own Convince Me host, Larry Smith. We thought, you know, we're dealing with a movie where, you know, you have long-haired Scottish men. Why not ask our very own Larry Smith? And if you're playing the home game, Larry is bald. Larry, how's it going?
I'm bald, yes. I am bald. I'm not bald so much as my hair just migrated south to warmer climate.
Very awesome beard.
It's, so you get it retired to the Florida of my body. To a very warm, moist place. Anyway,
moving
I'm
on.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
thanks for wanting to be on.
Where did it move?
Years. What?
The where Florida of my body. Please don't make me draw a map.
I feel like is that just, the Florida of your body?
Let's.
Well, we know what people, Florida is. People. Florida is something of the United States. It very anyway. I'm not gonna.
Thank God.
It crawled.
You
right
can
down
make,
to your
you,
Florida.
You know
man.
What? Write your own punchline. I'm not gonna spoon feed you that one.
You should have just left that bald joke out. All right, well, we're going to be looking at Highlander, 35th anniversary. You know, trying to find a movie that celebrated anniversary that deal with Ireland was hard. But hey, Highlander, 35 years. Let's talk about this awesome movie and all the crazy batshit movies that came after it, except for the TV shows, but we'll talk. Jay, give us the rundown of Highlander.
All right. Connor McLeod is just a 400-year-old dude hanging out at a wrestling match at Madison Square Garden when he's challenged to a sword duel in a parking lot. While this sort of behavior is normal at these types of events, these guys are trying to cut one another's heads off in order to gain others' power through the process of the quickening and become the last surviving immortal. in order to become mortal, but also have superpowers, I think. Anyways, we find that the time of the gathering is nearing. Through a series of flashbacks, we see that Connor has been trained by none other than James Bond himself, and that the final duel will be between himself and a guy that sounds a lot like Lex Luthor named the Kurgan. The Kurgan. What a freaking ego on this guy. Also, he killed the aforementioned Scottish, Egyptian, Spanish pimp. And so a final battle and a kick-ass Queen song ensues. There can be only one until the sequel and then, the TV show. And well, then an animated series and a reboot. So
and a video game.
And a video game.
Sounds about right. All right. Thank you for
that, Jay. Larry got me.
And the role-playing game. Don't forget about the role-playing game.
Jay, you probably win the award for shameless plug, so congratulations on that.
Love it.
All right. Without further ado, we have to get into our favorite part of the show. Aaron, take it away.
Fun facts. Fun facts. Thanks, Larry.
I'm just here to support.
I love it. This movie is directed by Russell Mulcahy, which I will talk about later. It was written by Gregory Wyden, Peter Bellwood, and Larry Ferguson, starring Christopher Lambert as Connor McLeod.
Lambert. He's French.
Thank you.
That's my fun fact. I apologize.
I'm here to share the fun facts. I appreciate it. Roxanne Hart as Brenda Wyatt, Clancy Brown as the Kurgan, Sean Connery as Ramirez, Beatty Edney as Heather, Alan North as Lieutenant Frank Moran.
I have to add one.
Yeah.
Because it's my namesake. James Cosmo. I mean, he's in this. I mean, it's a Scottish part. He's in this. He's in the clan in the beginning.
Yes.
He plays the cousin.
Second movie this year we've talked about that guy was in. He was in Trainspotting too. Make sure you check out our Trainspotting episode.
You're going against yourself for that shameless plug award. Aaron, go ahead.
I love it. This film, which this is something else I think we're going to get into and talk about later and with the sequels and the series, this movie had a budget of $16 million. It opened in the United States only making $2.4 million. It grossed a total domestically of $5.9 million. And that was where it stopped. It grossed nothing worldwide. It stopped at $5.9 million. This movie was a complete and utter bomb financially.
You take that back.
However, what?
Okay, you said financially. You're justified.
Financially. You were about to get offended. We might have some fights later on in this episode. It's going to be good.
Careful, I might get off.
The Rotten Tomatoes score of 69% and an audience score of 79%. So it's very well received, although not financially. This is my fun fact I wanted to throw out there that I learned a couple months ago. The monologue in the beginning of the film was recorded by Sean Connery in a bathroom stall, which is why it has the echo. It was like in a bathroom stall in an airport, which is why it has the echoey sound to it.
It works.
And it totally works. So they decided to keep it.
Is that why I overheard gate 32 now boarding?
Yes.
I thought I heard a urinal flush, though. Either way.
No, that was just the sequel.
Oh, yeah. The swords sparking while clashing was accomplished by attaching a wire to each sword that led down the arms of the actors to a car battery. How safe does this sound?
It was awesome.
Oh my God. Anything for the craft. One was connected to the positive terminal and the other was connected to the negative terminal. So when the swords touched, there was an arc. So that's where you, in the final battle, you get the flashing and all the sparking. Not to be confused with all of the lightning effects throughout the entire movie.
That's a lightning.
I can see
lots of lightning.
It had $16 million budget.
And it showed. It showed. All of the Sean Connery scenes had to be filmed in a week due to Connery's schedule. He had a bet with director Russell Mulcahy that they would not finish in 7 days, but Mulcahy won the bet. Connery earned $1 million for his week's work.
And earned every penny of it.
Every penny.
Even his death scene.
Oh my gosh, yes. For sure. The filmmakers were shocked to find out that after signing the contract for Christopher Lambert to play Connor McLeod, that he spoke absolutely no English.
This was my favorite part of the movie because this showed every scene he was in.
Yes.
You know what? I would argue his weird accents
worked.
It's, right?
Well, because when he's being questioned by the cop, he's like, "Where are you from?" And his answer is lots of different places.
He sounds like me on this podcast.
No, it's me permanently.
That's what White Claw do.
She gets the White Claw in her.
But I think it worked, right? It kind of like gave him this like
mysterious
all over the place. So his voice is kind of,
it worked
in a weird way.
Yeah. When you're that old and you've lived in that many different places and you probably have learned that many different languages
and been around that many dialects.
Yeah.
Right.
And now you live in New York in the 80s around a bunch of in and around the punk rock scene. You're just going to pick up English from people that are really jacked up on all types of different substances. And you're going to think that's what Americans sound like.
Substances, you mean apple juice, correct?
Sure.
All right, Aaron.
That's what I always told my grandma, too.
Apple juice, grandma?
Oh, my gosh. According to the director, Russell Mulcahy, the crew felt that Clancy Brown had actually become the Kurgan, and some refused to even go near him.
Deep character actor.
Well,
do you think he was as bad as Jared Leto as the Joker?
They're probably just scared because he's a giant man. Dude. Like, he's like 6'3" and not like scrawny.
And that makeup, like if he was wearing that, I wouldn't want to be around.
And his voice, like he could narrate any scene that takes place in hell with that voice, man.
Yeah he makes my voice sound like a soprano.
That's true. Sean Connery and Christopher Lambert got along so well during filming that they called each other by their characters' names even when they weren't filming. And as it was Lambert's insistence that Connery and his character returned for Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Do you think Connery forgave him for that?
I don't know what to say. I watched
well, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen got him to quit acting, so I don't know if...
It wasn't The Quickening. It was Leave.
It wasn't that movie, so he's probably okay with it. He got paid.
All right, Aaron, we keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fine. These are good. It's a good time. Queen originally intended to record only one song for this movie, but after viewing footage from the movie, they were inspired to write more. How Queen of them.
It is one of the greatest albums ever recorded.
It is so good. Mm-hmm. It is so good. They're very interesting to see how they come up with their music. The band members each had a favorite scene and composed songs specifically for them. Brian May wrote Who Wants to Live Forever during the cab ride home after seeing the movie, and Roger Taylor used the line "It's Kind of Magic" as the basis for the end title song. The opening scene was intended to take place during an NHL hockey match, but the NHL refused to allow the crew to film there because by the crew's own admission, they were intending to emphasize the violence of the hockey match. I love how the NHL doesn't actually get involved in violent movies until Jean-Claude Van Damme comes around later. Yeah.
Thank you. And it was a Blackhawks game.
Yes, exactly. I think that's hilarious. Let's see. Oh, and then Kurt Russell was originally cast as Connor McLeod, but he pulled out of the project because his girlfriend, Goldie Hawn, made him. And instead, it starred in Big Trouble in Little China. So not a bad trade-off, but we will also be covering that later this year.
You know, I don't know if I should thank Goldie Hawn or be super pissed at her, because I would love to have seen Kurt Russell as Connor McLeod.
Right.
But yeah, you wouldn't have got crazy accent then.
That's true.
You might not have gotten the chemistry between Connery and Lambert.
You mean Raiden?
We might not have gotten Raiden. Without this movie, we may not have gotten Raiden.
I guarantee
that's not
you
a
we
world,
would not have gotten Raiden.
Heck no.
That's not a world I can live in.
No. All right. Well, let's dive in on our first thoughts. Larry, you are our guest host. What are your first thoughts when it comes to Highlander? What are your first memories?
Well, first, I don't know if y'all have this, but you might be dealing with a super fan who owns a replica of Duncan MacLeod's katana.
Larry, there's no video.
No, keep
you
going.
You can see it, and that's all that matters.
Keep going.
That has legitimate battle chinks. It's been in a legitimate battle. It has just chinks all up and down the blade because I was stupid when I was 18. But yes, I don't care if the audience can see it. They understand that I'm a describe. For God's sakes, man. We're using our voices to paint a picture here.
It's a very beautiful story, guys.
It's not. It's cheap as hell. I got it at a county fair. But it's one of my most prized possessions. I mean, come on. The first time I saw this movie, I was just the right age. I was, gosh, maybe, no, 8? Would I have been? Because this came out in, what, 86?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would have been about 8, 9 years old the first time I saw this movie, which is the exact age a dude should be to see this movie for the first time. And to me, this was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. I mean, did I understand it? God, no. Do I barely understand it now that I'm 42? Absolutely. But this movie was so fun and so great. And the music synced up, obviously, because it was written for it, but it synced up perfectly. And I would watch it every time I could catch it on television or whatever movie channel. My uncle pirated it off of HBO onto a VHS tape for me. I wore that out. I got the album and wore that tape out. I mean, that's what made me want to study kendo, which eventually I got to, which is why I mean, it was what made me, and I know it's what inspired a lot of people to be like, I want to learn how to use a sword because it seems rad. I mean, the Kurgan is one of the greatest villains of all time. Clancy Brown brings him to life. He was terrifying, terrifying. But also represented this, like when he was in his punk persona, was so beautifully subversive about that culture and just the just life in general. And you know, MacLeod was this super cool dude that you wanted to be, and totally misled me on what a Scottish accent was supposed to sound like. Thank God for DuckTales that really set me straight. But you know, when you're 9 years old, 10 years old, these are the greatest special effects of all time. And then you grow up and you go back and look at it, and it's still like there's some the super sweet moments that you don't catch when you're a kid because you're like, yeah, he's in love. Who cares? Yeah, okay, that's very sweet. You're in your sheepskins and you're dying, and I'm still young, and blah 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 blah. But we went back. I watched it. My wife had never seen it. And so I was like, I really want to rewatch the movie, and she had wanted to see it, and we're both sitting there watching that scene, and it's an incredibly touching scene, and you don't realize it until now that you're older and you've got people that you actually care about, and it's just it's an awesome movie. Is it a good movie? No. Is it fun? 100%. It is a fun movie that has some good elements. Also, that the fight choreography in this first movie, but does it get better in the subsequent, especially in the television show when you get Adrian Paul, which I know we're not there yet, but I'm still talking about it. Adrian Paul, who's a legitimate martial artist, and you get him in there, and you actually get him people that aren't Bull Shannon from Night Court to fight against that can actually keep up. Is it awesome? Absolutely. But, you know, this is – I can recognize the faults in all of the movies. The Quickening notwithstanding, we don't admit that exists. I can admit the fault in all the other movies and everything else, but I still unironically love it.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it. Jay, what are your first thoughts when it comes to Highlander?
I was not quite as young as Larry. I was in high school when I watched it, and I think it was probably because of the show that I watched the movie, because we were talking in our group chat earlier, you know, the USA shows, Hercules, Xena, this, like those were all on in my house all the time growing up. So I haven't watched the show other than the pilot in a couple episodes recently, but I remember watching it. And I think, you know, in high school, I was like, I should check out the source material. And, yeah, it was one of those 80s movies I always wanted to see. And then I loved it. Also, unironically, I love it. There's definitely, like, as a craft, there's some weird editing things going on. And there's some real inconsistencies with the fantasy elements. Like sometimes swords make sparks, sometimes they don't, sometimes they have powers, I think. So there's some inconsistencies, but it also feels like this, I don't know, it feels big, but it also feels has kind of like a punk rock independent feel to it. And then Sean Connery's there, and you're like, maybe I was wrong. I don't. Maybe it's not a bad punk rock indie movie. It's got him in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember thoroughly enjoying it. But I was a fantasy, you know, I was a Lord of the Rings reader, you know, read fantasy books, and so this is right up my alley at that point in time, and I still absolutely love it. I was oh my god, I had so much fun rewatching this the other day. And I was like, okay, what are things I want to talk about? And I laughed a bunch and I loved it. And I'm with Larry, the Kurgan man is just one of the best. I think Clancy Brown is a, you know, he tends to be a character actor, but and he's been in Shawshank Redemption, Starship Troopers. He was just in Promising Young Woman that just came out. It's getting all these. He's an actor, you know, he can do those things. But to me, this is the one that made the best use of his physical presence and his voice. Yeah. And he was absolutely, absolutely terrifying as the Kurgan, and the fact that they call him the Kurgan, not Kurgan. He's not like Chris Kurgan or something. He's
the Dale Kurgan.
Dwight Kurgan.
It just makes it out like all that much more intimidating. And then last note, and then I'll get off. But Sean Connery legit blew me away. Like he didn't just like cash a check. Like he's like, what do you need? He's like, I'm not gonna give you a Spanish or Egyptian accent. I'm gonna give you Scottish. Well, the other guy's the Scottish guy. Well, I'm really the Scottish guy. Okay, whatever. So other than that, though, he killed it, man. He's super charming. He gives us like all the details we need too. My favorite thing that he did that this movie gives all this potential mythology, right? All we're told, there's these people who are immortals. They got to cut each other's heads off to get the other's powers. There can be only one. Why, Ramirez? Why is it? What's he say? Well, there's stars in the sky. There's immortals, and there can be only one. That's it, bro. That's
all you need.
And that, to me, is why this movie works.
And only Sean Connery could tell you that, and we would accept
it. And you believe it.
That's true.
Yeah, like if anybody else, we'd be like, no, I need more. But when Sean Connery says it, you go, okay, Yeah,
yeah, for sure. It was like that 10 seconds of the movie is what makes this movie work. And I think why the sequel struggled so bad, because they're like, look, we have this really cool mythology we can elaborate on. And then they just screwed it up trying to, you know, the quickening, they're aliens. I don't, what is going on? You know, they just kept trying to elaborate on it. And the story is not, why are these immortals this or that? It's the Kurgan killed my family, killed my mentor, and I want him dead because of it. You know, it's a simple tale with this backdrop. And I read this little bit that the writer saw, what was it? I think The Duelist, you know, it's this bat sword fight battle that takes place over decades. And he saw this Scottish castle and he said, I think that story is cool, but would it be cooler if it took place over centuries? And then he wrote The Highlander.
Ah,
that's it. That's so the guy didn't have the background mythology, which is why we didn't get it.
All right. Well, thanks, Jay, for the insight. Appreciate it. Aaron or Heather.
You almost called me Heather. Yeah.
I almost did. Aaron, what are your first memories? What was your first time viewing Highlander? It wasn't with a biker named Highlander, was it?
It wasn't. That was my first time shotgunning a beer with a biker. He maybe was a biker. He definitely had a long dark ponytail and was referred to as Highlander. So, and that was, now I realize that the references that were in my life that I first had were based on the show. So we would like go to Denny's and there'd be a waiter with long hair and someone would be like, yo, Highlander, more seasoned fries.
So he wasn't like a mountain biker who biked in like really steep hills?
No, he was like an actual biker, like a motorcycle. Biker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with like a leather vest and like a long ponytail.
Did he smoke cigarettes too?
Probably.
Damn,
at the time.
That guy's
so
cool.
Yeah, right?
Dang, he used to be cool.
I'm sure I was super cool to him as a 22-year-old. My first frame of reference for the movie was actually the 90s show, without realizing that there was this whole other movie associated with it. So first time I viewed it, the year is 2010. I've moved in with my boyfriend, who's now my husband.
I do love Highlander. That you started this like a Golden Girls sequel.
I had like
picture it, 2010.
So 2010. Well, it's going to get even more Golden Girls-ish, boys. Hey, so buckle
did
up.
Did you marry Highlander? Is your husband Highlander?
I'm not telling you. Goes to work in a trench coat with a sword.
And New Balances.
Yeah. You wear
dad shoes.
Yes.
The costume department deserves like an Academy Award for this.
When so you're ridiculous. Hauling a sword through New York City, you better have comfortable shoes.
Functional yes. shoes.
When you got a fight.
I love that so much.
When you got totally. A sword fight, New Balance. That was their 86
yep.
campaign.
407s, man. So the year is 2010. It is the time of month where I'm experiencing my menstrual cycle. I am on the couch with cramps and I decided to put on a movie and it's the Highlander. And I'm watching it and my husband, boyfriend at the time, hears the song Who Wants to Live Forever. So he comes out of the bedroom, like through the kitchen to sing and like joke and, you know, poke fun at. And he comes around the corner and I remember him coming out and being like, who wants to live? And then he stops and he's staring at me and he's like, oh my God, what happened? And I'm on the couch, like snot's coming out of my nose, like tears coming down. And I'm like, she's so ugly. He loved her so much. And I need you to go to Baracko's and get me a gluten-free cheese pizza. And he's like, I got anything to get out of here. I don't know how to help you right now. Amanda. And that was my first time seeing Highlander. Let me fast forward to today. I watched it again, and that scene came up. Same thing. Crying my face off. So it's not my uterus. It's actually just my heart. that feels the most feelings with that scene. So that's Highlander for me.
All right. So my first recollection is, you know, I knew Highlander from USA. You know, I would catch snidbits as I was channel surfing, but I never really watched the movie until college. I had a friend who recommended it, and he goes, "You watch one, the first one's okay. The first one's watchable." And then he goes, "When you get really drunk and you watch the other ones, you become angry." And so we're like, we have a family video. Let's just go rent them. So we did. And the first one was good. You know, I was fine with it. You know, it's flawed, but I mean, it's a movie that, you know, was made for, you know, 1600 million or 16 million in 1986. So, you know, lots of money. But it was watchable. That's the one thing, like, I couldn't peel myself away. Like, it was a good movie. Like, it had a decent story. It wasn't trying to be too much. It knew it was telling a very crazy story, but it didn't bank on that. It was just trying, it was being very straightforward, which is, I think, what makes it work too. You know, going along with what Jay said, it had a compelling villain. I always say, you know, you have a good movie if you have a good villain. If you have a villain that you just hate, it's going to make the movie that much more enjoyable. And we'll talk about what I think about the Kurgan when we talk about the takeaways and acting. But I watched it and I just remember seeing some of the shots. You know me, I love cinematography, and my favorite shot of the whole movie is the very end of the movie when he is going to battle on top of the rooftop, and you've got the sky cap sign here, and you've got dark, you know, New York City skyline, and then you just have a doorway in your bottom right hand corner and he just emerges. That scene right there made me love the movie. Plus, the first time you see Kurgan, you only see half of his face. I just think some of this, you know, the movie tried without trying to be too hard or trying too hard to, I don't know, but it worked for me. And then I progressed to get more drunk and we made it to the final dimension. And at that point, I broke my favorite drinking glass. That is my college story with Highlander, because it just got me so mad from watching the quickening to final dimension that I just gave up. You know, and then a couple years later, I watched Endgame. I was like, okay, there's some redeeming qualities here. But yeah, hey, that's
real quick on your the cinematography, that opening scene.
Yes,
at the wrestling match.
Yes,
I was really impressed because I was like,
"Yeah,
yeah." One take, it's floating through everything, and I was like, "That's 86. They ain't got drones,
right?"
Like, that's a really impressive shot that they just did.
Even that final fight scene after Heather, was it Heather? No,
Brenda.
Brenda, thank you. Brenda intervenes, and he you know starts fighting. Well, I guess. That whole camera work where it pans back, I mean, the fact that they used an open area like that allowed for some great camera work there. I mean, again, real great tricks of the trade. That's why I like it. And then everything falls apart in 1991 with the quickening. But we'll talk and slander that crap when we get there. Let's just talk about takeaways. I mean, I know we've already talked about the acting. I'm just going to include my two bits, and then I'll let you guys run with it. You know, I've talked about cinematography, but the acting, Clancy Brown, I think what makes him so awesome is that he is one of the best villains ever, but he's so underrated. A lot of people don't catch on to that, but he is just such a tour de force in this performance. He towers over Christopher Lambert, but he's a strong physical force. And his laughing all the time is just, it gets under your skin. And I remember Box Office Mojo does those videos where they count down, like, you know, top so-and-so, top maniacal laughs. Kurgan was like number two or three. And it's that scene when he's driving playing chicken with all the cars. I mean, that was pure.
With the old lady hanging off the front. Yep. Yes.
Pure. No. The last when Brenda's
when
in the
he's
car.
In the car with Brenda.
Oh, with Brenda. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. I get my vehicular homicide mixed up in that.
It's easy to do. but no, just I think Clancy Brown was fantastic in this movie. Christopher Lambert, you know, he was fine. Like for his first movie, you know, yeah, his accents were all over the place, but it worked for the movie. And of course, Sean Connery, you know, fantastic. So that's all I've got to say. Cinematography and the acting, spot on for me. It's what really sold the movie. What else do you guys think when it comes to this movie as a whole? What are your main takeaways? Who wants to take over the floor?
I'll take it.
All right, go ahead, Jay.
I'm gonna. Larry has expounded on the soundtrack already.
There we go.
And how good it is. So he might want to talk about that some more. Although one thing I love is the main Queen song, because there is also an orchestral song. The Princes of the Universe. What I love is we get more exposition on the Immortals from that song than anything else in the movie. And I love it. Yeah. I love that song basically gives us some, you know, strange backstory to the Immortals and its freaking queen. But my takeaway that I kind of want to talk about is the mythology of the Immortals. Like I said, the thing that makes this work is the fact it's why I said this in Back to the Future. Why I think Back to the Future works is because it doesn't concern itself with the consistencies of time travel. It concerns itself with a love story, with an adventure story. And I think that's why this one works. It's a revenge story. It doesn't concern itself with the details of the mythology. But I always hear all the time people cracking on Gremlins, right? Oh, can't feed them after midnight, can't get them. These are ridiculous rules, but are not the rules of the Immortals and Highlander just as preposterous? Like, why is it cutting off the head that does the job? Right? Why is that how you get that person's power?
Why can't it be?
Why do you have to be killed? You have to be killed once before you become an immortal. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you're not killed, then you just grow old and die.
I feel like Larry just adjusted himself in his seat. Like he's readying himself to go for the response. Okay, I'm liking the visual I'm getting right now.
When we start getting into the TV series, that's when we can start answering some of these questions. Mm.
You're going to be taken to school, Jay.
Hey, no, this is good. That's fine. These are just more questions.
May I remind you? Duncan MacLeod's sword.
You both live in Springfield, Jay. I'd watch your back. Don't go to a zoo because then a shadowy figure might emerge and it'll be Larry with his katana.
I've already got the shaved head like the Kurgan. Y'all just sneak up behind you and be like, hello, Mom, and that's it.
Run through a bunch of leaves and breathing heavy.
Don't lose your temper.
Did I scare you?
If your head comes away from your neck, it's over.
Right. I don't, it's like, what are the rules if you fall and like smash your head to bits, but it's still connected to your neck? Does it still repair itself?
What happens if you're an immortal and you're in France and you get beheaded by a guillotine? Is it just like, ooh, that was just bad luck as an immortal?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Immortals have been killed during the revolution.
That's just
the
it.
French
okay.
Revolution.
Because they got Larry's here to answer these questions.
They chopped their heads off. That was it. But there was no immortal. Because an immortal didn't take their head, there was no quickening. So their power just goes.
I got a lot of questions about the quickening stuff.
But, I mean, what's hard to understand, Jay? You hit your head on a rock. You just heal. You come back. You breathe heavy. You're like, whoa, that was a close one. But if your head comes away from your neck, then that's it. Ramirez gave us that rule.
What if like a large chunk of your head comes off?
Is your head removed from your neck?
Well, part of it is.
is the neck still attached to the?
It feels like it's a spinal cord issue.
I'm just going to say the brain. When the brain is separated from the rest of the body.
The head has to come completely off the body.
This
and
is
then the power is released.
This is a spinal cord issue.
I take a sword shot mid forehead, just lobs off the top part of my head. I'm good. I'll be back sometime.
No, yeah, in a couple months when you heal up.
Yeah. No, I'm on Larry.
I don't understand what is so hard to get.
Central scars on the neck. They heal up unless their neck is cut.
Well, the Kurgan healed up.
He had a huge scar on his neck.
He did have a big scar.
It was a scar that had healed.
Oh,
what's so difficult to understand that?
Well, they'd be covered in scars, and they weren't.
Standing in one
corner. It's not on his neck. The neck is the magical area.
But that's what I'm saying. Is that part of it, too? The scars, they scar up on the neck, but nowhere else?
We don't see everywhere else, though.
There's books. Do we need to read the books?
There's a full-on naked sex scene. Everyone's naked. Lots of butts.
That sex scene is like super sensual, and like he's like a very gentle lover. Like,
well, and I want to point out the takeaway that I got from that first movie. The takeaway, the what I walked away with is, if you want to sleep with a broad, you force her to stab you.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that's
silence from everybody, because that's what he did. He made Brenda stab him.
And then they got, and then they had, yeah, then they had hotly made love.
Yeah. That's, isn't yeah. that, it's There's always
way
worked
too much
for
talk
me.
About stabbing yeah. and sex scenes right now.
It's never failed.
We went
How do you
from
think
chopping,
I got my wife?
From head, cutting off heads to stabbing and sex. It's fine. It's
the
fine.
The stabbing makes more sense. It's a penetrative action.
The 35 years yeah. after this movie, this is where we're at.
I'm saying, I'm
okay,
just,
okay,
you want to take away.
Wait till we get to the show, because that is so sexy.
Adrian Paul is a sweet piece.
That show is so sexy.
Adrian
USA
Paul
Network
is,
was so sexy. They like that, they knew how to do it.
Well, I was like watching it, and my kids were in the room. I was like, ugh. Do I have to change this? It says it's like PG-13, but
it took more like I got to change my pants is what I got to do.
God. All right. Jay, do you have any more about your mythology before we start talking about the TV show?
What other questions?
Jay, yes. The neck is actually, that is the key component. The neck, if the neck is severed and the head comes completely off the body, that is how the magic of the immortals is released. And yes, that is the most vulnerable spot. Otherwise, everything else heals perfectly fine. They can fall off a building, snap their spine, they will heal back. But for whatever reason, and there's no real explanation ever given, much like after midnight. Well, it's always after midnight. You can't feed them after midnight. It's always after midnight. Somehow it's always after midnight.
The right. Does neck, that change with time zones? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, this is just the suspension of disbelief that you just, it's a big pill that we just have to swallow and go, pretty lights, big swords, Kurgan mean.
But I think Jay's right, and that's why it worked when there was no explanation other than Ramirez just being like, why is the sky blue?
Yeah.
McCloud! Like, you know, it's like...
Yeah, because...
The quickening!
Obviously,
and like, that's it, and you're like, yeah, let's go! The quickening!
They don't even know.
Right.
Jay, you got any more for your takeaways?
He's dissatisfied with that answer.
We're going to let Aaron say a takeaway here. Aaron, go ahead.
Okay, I mean, like, since we're kind of asking questions, oh, I've got a lot of questions.
Mother of God.
I love the movie. It's fun, but it's, look at him, yes. I'm tickled by a lot of the things that happen in this movie. Like, the whole quickening process, and especially with Kurgan, like, everything's really breathy. The fight scenes, everything seems like every time he kills somebody, everything's exploding around him. He's breathing even heavier. He seems to be experiencing some sort of climax. It seems very metaphorical, like throughout the entire movie. I feel like, and especially the big scene, and I'm going to let, you know, Ryan talk about that, but like one of the big fight scenes, it's like everything's exploding everywhere. And I'm like, is this like seriously metaphorical for like some sort of climax? Like, what is this? You know, I don't know. Did anyone else pick up on that?
I took it as Kurgan. That's representative of the dark energy that he represents throughout the movie. So whereas McCloud, yes, still the quickening that he experiences is still somewhat destructive to things around him.
Right.
The Kurgan's quickening that he experiences is definitely destructive.
Violent.
Yeah, it's
well,
violent.
Almost has got kind of like, it's like he's almost trying to get like a fix.
Well, and it's, yes, because obviously he was born, you know, they talk about he was born for battle. He was bred for battle. He has
almost
a lust.
A little sexual. Yeah, yes. Lust. Thank you.
Well, and you know, we've seen that all of his appetites merge into one. You yeah. know, and I mean, come on, when the hooker opens up the door and she's like, I'm Candy. And, of course you are. Yeah. And then we don't know what happens to poor Candy, except we probably know what happened to poor Candy.
He's a great tyrant.
Oh, he's yeah.
He's tyrant.
I think the quickening matches the persona of the person. So if you're good, it's going to be more you know, of an enlightenment. You're taking that energy, you know, it's a positive thing. Whereas the Kurgan was like, brah!
Yeah, it seemed more perverse.
Right.
Whenever he was experiencing one, when he, you know, took one of the immortals' heads off, and I was like, okay, what's going on here? You know, kind of thing. That was a big question I had, and takeaway. And then we can get into the end scene, because I just am so amused by the whole ending. That's my big takeaway. I mean, I enjoy everything about the movie. I just also think it's ridiculous. Completely ridiculous.
Larry, what do you think when it comes to the what are your takeaways?
Oh, I thought I already mentioned it about
That one didn't count. Talk more about Queen.
The fact that the movie inspired Queen, who went in and were like, yeah, we wrote a song, and then they came out and they're like, we're writing all the songs. And
everybody back off.
Yeah. I mean, it's the album. In fact, tonight, as we were making dinner, we listened to the album, which, again, my wife had seen the movie, but never really listened to the album. She was like, my God, this is really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the songs are really poppy, and some are like a precursor to the like electronica dance movement. You get some of those elements in there, and then you get, you know, Who Wants to Live Forever, which is like a very classic Queen style song. But then Princes of the Universe, like, we're listening to it, and I looked at my wife, and I was like, you want to grab a sword and go fight bad guys, don't you, when you listen to this song? She was like, absolutely I do. I mean, and Queen is great about getting what could be a cheesy movie. Like, let's face it, Flash Gordon. But that soundtrack slaps, man. That is such a good soundtrack. Sure. I think the soundtrack
like makes the movie more serious.
Yes. And I think in this situation, it's a beautiful symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Where the soundtrack elevates the movie, but because I know the movie so well, it elevates the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And the other takeaway is, it's always great when you have clear cut. Here's the good guy. Here's the bad guy. And the bad guy is so bad, but you kind of can't help but love him because he's so bad.
Right.
And we see him do bad things, absolutely. But we also, most of the really bad things are just alluded to.
Right.
So there's almost a cognitive dissonance when it comes to, you know, I can't like him, he's so bad, but then you're like, oh.
Well, you know, and just going off what you said, when the Kurgan comes after him in the church, I mean, that is just a hard scene to deal with, because he is just so ruthless. I mean, he lets him know that he took Heather. Because he thought that it was Ramirez's woman, and so he had his way with her. And then when he brings that up in church, you know, on hallowed ground where they cannot fight, it's just tension filled. It's amazing.
Well, and him walking in and slapping the candles.
Yep, yep.
And putting pure the genius. Candles out and harassing the nuns.
Pure genius.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just talk real quick, because Aaron had mentioned it, and then we'll move on to improvements, which there's not many. Maybe there might be a few. But let's just talk that final scene. I mean, you spend $16 million on a movie, and all your swordplay up until this point have been trash. And then you get this final fight scene that is beautifully choreographed. I mean, it is, you know, you see the madness of Kurgan as he's destroying the sign. You know, you see them try to outwit each other when the water comes down, and they go underneath the water. I mean, it is just a beautiful poetry. It's like watching a ballet. You know, you have some great camera work. And I think that you're really ending on a strong note with that final battle scene. Just a few thoughts before we hop on to improvements. What do you guys think about that final battle scene?
I think the argument I would have about most of the sword battles up to that point had been pretty bad, but the fight between Kurgan and Ramirez was very good.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. Anytime Sean Connery was, even as Sean Connery, he was graceful. He did a great job, but yeah, I think you nail it. We get to see, you know, besides the sparks and the lightning and the, all that,
car batteries.
Yeah. Which is rad, and it works, and electricity is no joke, kids. I used to have hair, but I don't want to say realistic, but it's almost a more realistic fight, yeah, with the there's no like incredible aerial kicks. When McLeod kicks Kurgan, it's low kicks to the torso that he is able to do when he gets an advantage. And yeah, this is obviously where they spent the majority of their money.
Yeah.
And obviously finally had enough money to buy a fight choreographer and say, okay, we're actually going to do something here.
We just talked a little bit about this, as far as fight choreography goes, when we did The Last Dragon, that just dropped. Hop in and listen to that one too. But it's kind
Jay,
of
you have competition now for shameless plugs,
but we're both on flashbacks. It's not competition.
Yes, it is.
But like, it's kind of refreshing in like the world of CGI and like really complex battle scenes to just see two people actually fighting physically and not digitally or behind a green screen or anything like that. So I've been really refreshed to see these movies that have a lot of this physical fight choreography.
Agreed. And you know, movies in the 80s, you definitely get more of that. You know, we are when you want to watch authentic fights,
just more simplicity.
Just 80s. Just watch the 80s movies, whether it's Kickboxer, whatever. You know, 80s really had that choreography down pat. Yeah, I would almost say more the first Mortal Kombat. So, Jay, do you want to chime anything in before we move on to improvements, or do you want to just start talking about improvements?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It's whatever. You can talk Final Battle, yeah, or we can start talking about improvements.
You know, I'll talk improvements. I kind of hinted at them, but like the fantastical elements, I wish they would have been more consistent, because the movie starts that fight scene. Like I said, the sword fighting's kind of meh, but like the sparks from the swords, the like they almost seemed like they had magical powers in the first scene. And then the rest of the sword fights were just kind of sword fights.
Yeah.
And I don't know like what happened to all that. And you know, it could have been a budgetary thing. They just plumb done run out of car batteries, I guess.
Go on the street and hijack one.
So I think that's one thing I would like to see. Some of the editing, like I said, there's some really noticeable weird cuts that I was just, yes, like, that was a little jarring, and
there's some big
weird and doesn't
errors
line up.
Yeah.
It's a product of its time. But you know, those are small things. I mean, I think the movie just works overall as a whole because the story's simple, the bad guy's great, Sean Connery did what Sean Connery does best, and I thought Christopher Lambert, he even not knowing English, you know, he does have this kind of weird, I would call it like dark charm, you know, mm-hmm, like is this guy being a dick or is he kind of charming? And
he's just French.
Yeah. Neither. He's French.
All right.
So far
France,
I've gone after
trash.
The Irish, the Scottish, and the French. Okay.
Yeah, you're not making any friends in the EU.
Perfect.
I'm Belgian. Keep going, man.
So I think more works for it than doesn't, but we'll get to this when we get into the sequel stuff. This is a movie, a concept I'm super open to seeing rebooted or retooled. You know, normally I wouldn't say that. There's no way a reboot is going to even look like this movie. or feel like this movie, the story. I mean, it just, the sensibilities are so different. Like, so it's not a fear that I'm like, they're going to destroy the thing that I love, because they already like did that with sequels 2 through.
Well, and every time 17. They made one of these, right. And then every time they made one of these, they lost money on it.
Yeah. Every one of them lost money.
Every single one.
It shows.
It only made about half of its production budget back.
So this.
And they kept making them. And I was asking my husband, like, I'm like, I don't understand. Who kept green lighting these?
Well, it's because this one garnered.
Larry, can we see that sword again?
It's
no, right. No, but he's like, they had to be making money somewhere. Had to be making money somewhere.
It's the cult.
It was
following.
This guy.
It was the cult following, and you know.
But did the cult following grow in 5 years to launch Highlander Fever in the 90s?
It was the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It was
that's
TV
what
show.
Sparked
the cult.
More, I mean, sparks
because The Quickening came out in 91, and Larry, correct me if I'm wrong. The show came out in 94.
Mm-hmm. 92, I thought, right?
92,
either 92. Early 90s.
But you're right. You're right. It's all around the same time. 91.
So people couldn't realize, like, oh man, we just had a shit movie. There's a TV show that's actually really good. So, you know, it was definitely that cult following that really allowed for the idea of Highlander to keep going. So,
which makes sense.
Right. Okay.
But then what, after Highlander 2 and the show's successful, that's fine. They still lose money on Highlander 2. Then they greenlight the third one. Same thing. $30 million production budget, makes 15. Then they greenlight a fourth one. They do this for 4 or 5 movies.
The fourth one was actually good.
Okay, but I'm just saying, you know, financially, it never recoups its cost. So that's why I was like, what's going on here?
Again,
this is confusing that someone kept greenlighting it. And my husband was like, they had to be making money somewhere. For like in whatever royalties, do you, like VHS sales, something.
Well, the TV show, like you were right, Aaron. It came out in 92. I couldn't remember. I was 90. You could have told me anywhere between 91 and 94, and I would like, sure, that sounds right. But 92, and then Highlander: The Final Dimension, the third one, out in 94.
Yeah. Okay.
So the Highlander TV series had started gaining enough popularity that they went, let's give Lambert another vehicle and see what we can do with it. And then everyone went, oh, great, another Highlander movie. Let's go see what they do with this. And then we all went and watched it. And we all, those of us that were super dorks about it, we justified that it wasn't that bad. I mean, it had Mako.
Thanks, Mario Van Peebles.
Yeah, and Mario Van Peebles, who did his best impression of the Kurgan he could.
All right, we're starting
but a foot shorter.
The sequel. Let's keep talking improvement. I know there's one improvement that I would like. Okay, so I always pose these questions when it comes to improvements. It's like, do we really need it improved, or is it good as it is? And the chemistry between Lambert and Connery, it just oozes off the screen. And I wished for more, but I didn't wish for more because it worked with how much we were given. But you yearn for more. And when we're yearning for more, they give it to us in The Quickening and you want to shoot yourself. So that's just my thought. I don't know. Any more thoughts when it comes to improvements?
Oh, I got thoughts.
Go ahead.
Don't make the sequels.
Okay. We'll talk about that in just one second.
Save your money. Invest it into the USA show.
I heard the DVDs are cheap.
So. Yes.
Aaron, go ahead. What are the improvements?
Yeah, spend money on Comic-Cons to send all of the stars of the series around the country for autographs and photo ops. Okay, this is, I'm not going to say it's an improvement, but because I'm not very big on like, oh, let's change everything, but I do agree with Jay for, I don't know, because Russell Mulcahy really mainly did music videos for very prominent artists. Like most of his career before he did this movie, with the exception of one film called Razorback, you know, he was doing music videos for Elton John, for Duran Duran, for Billy Joel, and then he made this movie. There's some big continuity and editing errors in this film.
Yeah,
for sure. So like we talked again about on The Last Dragon, for a lower budget kind of guilty pleasure B movie, we were, you know, surprised at how clean a lot of it was. With this one, it was like, I don't know if it was just in contrast. Like, I was like, man, there's some kind of like, there's a little bit of sloppiness here and there with some of this, or like some of the like weird place jokes, like why do the fish fall out of his, you know, and just after he gets out of the water, like they're flopping around, like just like kind of jokes that fall a little dead. Some of the special effects are a little weird. But like in the fight scene, and this is just, I'm sure like Jay was saying, it's a product of its time, but it's like the castle. I'm like, why is the castle's blowing up and it's exploding, not in any sort of logical manner, lightning, all that's left is the stairway. It was just kind of bizarre. It just made it very more ridiculous. And then the last fight scene, I enjoy it and I wouldn't change it. But this is how I explained it to my husband, who actually has never seen Highlander. I'm like, I need you to watch this scene. I'm like, because it's kind of bonkers and in the best 80s way. I'm like, but I need you to watch it. But I also need you to hear me explain it. And he's like, okay, this is how I explain the last 3 minutes of the film. Kurgan gets crazy eyes. Then he doesn't have them. Then he does. Then it sounds like John Carpenter's The Thing is coming out of his neck with fireworks. Then McCloud has a weird orgasmic quickening, and the demons from Ghost, but white, show up while he's doing somersaults in the air and screaming.
With the wire showing.
I know everything.
With the show.
I am everything. I'm like, and then his prize is that he's completely psychic and all powerful, but now he's going to die.
You know, that makes the movie that much more enjoyable. Can you have a commentary track when they release the Blu-ray?
Yeah. He was like, you're ridiculous. I can't deal with you. I'm like, no, you need to watch it now. And he's like, you're right. It does kind of sound like The Thing coming out of his neck.
It really does. All right. Well, thank you for that. I mean, you know, this movie is flawed, but it's still a very good movie. And it actually has an impact. And that impact, let's talk impact, because it's going to segue right into the sequel talk. Because this movie, while good, it had the impact to have a cult following, and it spawns 4 sequels, an anime movie, an anime TV show, 2 TV shows, and a reboot. So let's just talk about the impact of the show overall, and then we'll break down the sequels and do our ranking. So, Aaron, what do you think the overall impact of the 1986 classic? No. What's 1986 impact of Highlander?
This is edging on guilty pleasure. Like, we got to be honest here. Lou almost made the cut to this show.
Call it what it is. You're right. I agree. But it has that.
We're in 2021 still talking about it, right? Like, so obviously it's made an impact. The lines are known. The TV show. And there's going to be a reboot. So, I mean, obviously it's still culturally relevant. And you still hear about it, or the names or whatnot. Like, whereas we talked about on Thelma and Louise, Jay brought up, you know, it was like very popular in the cultural zeitgeist. And then it's like, if you ask anyone today, they probably would have no idea really about Thelma and Louise. But Highlander, like, do you guys still think that today, if you ask somebody or you said this line, they'd know what it was? What do you guys think?
I
100% I do.
I know this. The line is iconic.
Yeah.
So. And of course,
yeah, there can be only one. I think most people know.
Yep. Jay, why don't you go ahead and just segue? Let's hear your thoughts when it comes to impact.
I think in addition to that, I think this movie created an atmosphere of world building. It didn't necessarily succeed in it with the follow-ups. Once again, with the exception of the show, and I would argue the anime movie. I'll talk about that a little bit, but it does world building, and it opens it up so cool. And some of the stuff you see in this and on the TV show, God, I hate to bring it up because it sucked, but Wolverine Origins is basically like the first whatever 20 minutes is a highlight reel from Highlander, just like, wow, showing him going through time.
Wow. You're right. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh
my God, you're right.
There's now the other. Watch that terrible sequel. Movie.
Don't do it. So I think it did a lot for world building. You know, I think there was a lot of stuff at this time where they had these cult followings and these groups, you know. Next year, right after this, and this we're going to talk about one of the movies in April, but Star Trek Next Generation. So this is kind of a time in pop culture where they're doing a lot more world building. So I think that's another impact that it's had.
I'm going to agree with you on that because, I mean, same year, Willow. I mean, that definitely built up, you know, the whole idea of fantasy and world building. But, yeah, I totally agree with what you guys have both said. You know, the impact is huge. And, like I said, cult following. We actually have one of those cult members with us tonight. So here to give us his take on the impact of Highlander is Larry Smith. Larry, this is the perfect segue to talk about the sequels, too.
I'm glad the cult leader brought his circumcision sword.
That's right. Mazel tov. There can be only one, the Briss boy today.
Yeah.
I think beyond, I've went on and on already about it, but like the fact that this movie inspired Queen to write an album, that is hugely impactful. It then sparked, yes, multiple sequels that, look, is two a dumpster fire? Yes. Should we forget about it? Yes. I don't even want to talk about it now. And I hate myself.
But we're going to.
But no, I think we've said what we need to say. It's a dumpster fire. They tried to ruin the whole thing. They made them aliens. It's stupid. And then the first time he experiences a quickening, he goes back to being young. It's dumb and is forgettable. But the fact that it then sparked card games and cartoons and anime and inspired a whole generation of dudes and women to pick up a sword and actually learn some of that art. I mean, not for nothing. It you know, there are people that there's some dudes that just, yeah, went out and got some swords at county fairs, and then there's some people that went and was like, I actually want to learn how this is actually done. And then you do, and you go, oh, that's not at all how it looked in the movie. This is better. But then you get the television show, you get role-playing games, you get, and yeah, the iconic line of there can be only one. Everyone, you say that, and even if somebody doesn't know what that is specifically from, they still somehow know that line.
Yeah, I'm okay. So I'm gonna take a minute here. I'm gonna get emotional here. But just recently, I had the passing of my mother, and you know, my mom would always want me to be strong and to keep my humor and my wits about me. And I do this all the time. But my brother married someone by the name of Lindsay Nicole. I also have a cousin named Lindsay Nicole. I also have an aunt and uncle, both named Aunt Sue and Uncle Mike, both sides of the family. When we get to my mother's wake and we're all there, I look at everybody and I go, there can be only one. And I just lay a butter knife down and I walk away.
Stop it.
So, you know, I just, you know, wow, I didn't break up. So mom's with me. So, but yeah, just that moment, like, that's Highlander, and it's relevant now, and everybody knew what I was talking about. So, you know, it's still culturally relevant in the sense that, hey, it's a movie, and it was a good movie for the 80s. You know, yes, the impact is the fact that it made, you know, a great line, but and we've got sequels, but it is what it is. But people know that line. So sorry to steal your thunder, Larry.
Oh, no if anything, you made my points that I was making more coherent and relatable. So thank you.
All right. Well, let's do it. Oh God, here we go. All right. We've been doing really well with time. Okay. We are at probably our 1 hour mark. This very well where we could fall off the wagon and talk for another half hour. I don't know. I'm going to go first because I haven't seen all these, but you have Highlander. You have Highlander 2, The Quickening. Highlander 2 Quickening is considered one of the worst movies ever made. And I'm a Jaws fan, so I know that Jaws the Revenge is in there too, in that category. You've got the third movie, which is The Final Dimension, but it's also called The Sorcerer. Anytime you have a movie that has multiple titles is ridiculous. You have Highlander 4 Endgame, which brings Connor McLeod from the movie and Adrian Paul's, what's his name?
Duncan.
Together in a crossover, so that was really cool. You have Highlander the Source, which was like a made-for-TV movie. With just Duncan. You've got A Search for Vengeance, which was an anime movie. You've got Highlander the TV show with Adrian Paul, martial artist. So then you have Highlander the Raven. I had no idea what this was until
unwatchable. I tried.
Is the female the immortal, or is it still the dude?
Yeah, Amanda.
Okay.
No, Amanda, I couldn't get – I couldn't – it is like – no, it's just so poorly, cheaply made.
Okay.
I thought. Then you have a thought, Larry?
What?
Oh, it's – I watched one episode.
They spent all their money on everything else.
I was mad at myself that I didn't like it. I wanted to like it. I felt like I was supposed to like it.
I couldn't even get through the episode.
This is why I'm going first, because I'm just going to go run through everything and what I know, and then I'm going to let the people that actually watch this shit talk more about it, because I think everything after Highlander 1 and Highlander's TV show is just batshit crazy. You all know that that's my word, batshit crazy, but I think the origin of batshit crazy stems from this franchise, because this franchise is bonkers. Lastly, you have Highlander the Animated Series. I have seen like 3 or 4 episodes of that. That show is killer, but I know Jay wants to talk about that. So my ranking would go like this: Highlander the movie, Highlander the show, Highlander the Animated Series, Highlander Endgame, and then Highlander Final Dimension, and then the rest can all fall off the face of the planet. That's my ranking. So The Quickening, Search for Vengeance, The Raven, I don't even care. So Aaron, do you want to go next to let the two guys that probably have seen – you guys, all three of you have watched so much. So I'm just going to let whoever wants to go first, go for it.
I dove in. I dabbled. Okay. I dabbled in all things Highlander today. Jay was mad because he dropped all of the – sources of Highlander like a month ago and was like, guys, look at this. Oh my God, this rabbit hole goes so deep.
And she just picked it up like, today.
Eh. Yeah, I ignored it. And then today she I was like, oh my God, guys, did you know about all this Highlander stuff?
Meanwhile, so Jay's in the corner crying.
Right. Jay is on Larry level Highlander knowledge expert.
No, so, I had a life. What do you mean?
So if all of the sequels, including the original, if the original movie and the sequels and the show and the spinoffs were all immortals and they all had to fight each other, it would come down to Highlander the movie, the original, and Highlander the series. And if they had to fight each other, of course, the original would win.
Okay. One thing I forgot to mention, and anybody going to mention?
But Highlander the series.
Go ahead.
Renegade?
I was going to mention the Renegade cut.
I haven't watched it yet.
It's still ridiculous. It doesn't improve the movie anyway. So I would just call.
I only got 12 minutes into Highlander 2, The Quickening. That's not the director's cut, correct? And when they explained to me why they came back, I was like, I got to go. I can't do this. But Highlander the series, super sexy.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I'm nodding my head yes, and they can't see that, but I liked it.
I won't disagree with you,
Aaron.
Okay,
I'm going to let you talk all about it, but very sexy. My husband doesn't understand what's going on because all day I've been talking about, like, sexual innuendos in the Highlander movie. I'm talking about how sexy Highlander the series is. He's like, I don't know about this. What's going on
You've
here?
Been biting your lip like Vanity in The Last Dance ever since we started. Or Last Dance.
That's from The Last Dragon. Oh my God. I'm watching Highlander the series and looking at it like Vanity is looking at T-Mac in The Last Dragon. Yeah, super sexy, and I think it's super fun because it shows you, like, I remember in the 90s, I'd love to, like, spend time talking about USA Network, but they, like, you know, they had a whole, like, menagerie of, like, racy shows, and I feel like this was, too, it was, like, you know, I don't know, sensual and sexy and fun and, like,
silk cool. stockings.
Silk stockings, La Femme Nikita, they had it all. So that's how I'm going to rank them. What about
all right,
you guys?
Jay, we're going to let Larry go last because I'm sure he's got a lot of thoughts. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
All right, so I didn't rewatch all the sequels. I've seen them at some point in time, but here's Highlander the movie, number one. Highlander, A Search for Vengeance, number two. That's the anime. I'm not a big anime guy, but it is by the director of Ninja Scroll, which is one of the few anime movies I've seen and really liked. And it's kind of one of the bigger names, more mainstream ones. So it's very good. The reason it works, they barely even talk about the immortal business. It is legit. One dude for centuries over and over getting his ass kicked by another dude that killed his wife until the end. So that's great. It worked because it didn't try to get into the business of telling the mythology. And very close to that, I'd put the TV show. Then I would put the Goldbergs episode.
Yes.
Where they where they have two competing Highlander clubs and there can be only one, and Clancy Brown plays the shop teacher in that. So it's super awesome. So I would say that episode, then Endgame, and then I don't care. But the animated series, real quick, I did watch, and it's rated Y7. It's for 7-year-olds. How do you make a show about a movie that's all about cutting other dudes' heads off?
That's why I rated it so high.
Their power. And what they did, they put it into the future. Of course, there's talking animals too now. So it's sort of based off Highlander. And then all the good immortals don't want to cut off heads, but the main bad guy wants to cut off heads, which still seems just like a totally jacked up movie or show for kids. And it's crazy. It's not bad. The animation's good. I mean, it kind of falls in line with some of the animation of the 90s that it was made with, but I was blown away that they tried to make a cartoon for kids off of this movie and show that's all about cutting off heads and, as Aaron is saying, getting sensual.
You know what makes it through all of through the animated series, the USA or the series on network cable, and you know is Queen.
Yeah,
Queen goes with all of them.
Yeah, that had to be a big get for the show on USA to have a Queen song like that.
And it was their theme song. It was
That's. I wonder if there was like a rights thing where they owned it, because I bet for a TV show to get a song like that is crazy expensive, because you'd have to pay the royalties every episode and all that. Right. But I digress. Larison, what are your thoughts?
All right, Larry, you are the fanboy. Let's hear your thoughts.
Okay. I have to put the TV show as number one.
Okay.
The TV show is number one simply because it took what was already a good story. It took the bones of the house and then turned it into something just incredible with a whole mythology and better special effects and better fight choreography, the whole thing just was so much more than what the movie. Like, the movie set the stage. The first movie is a close second with the series. But my rankings, if we were ranking, it's TV series, the first Highlander Endgame, maybe Dimensions somewhere in there, and then the rest of it kind of just muddles into the whatever, and Highlander 2 doesn't exist. I have completely blocked it from my brain, and the only reason I'm even saying the words Highlander 2 together is because I've heard you guys say it so much, and I don't believe it exists. You can't prove to me that it does, and I will always deny that it existed ever.
I've gathered from the Highlander, you know, fan base that it's, I don't think it's considered canon. I don't
it's
think
not,
any,
no.
Yeah, I think it's been it was just so bad they wiped it.
Well, and the fact
just
that
like
they tried to redo it with the different cut. What's
Renegade cut?
Renegade.
And it still didn't work. They still were like, nope, not for us.
Yeah. Well, I think even the director was like, yeah, this is just a what if. Let's just move on to the next thing.
Well, let's just runs into our perfect wrap up for all of this. Let's wrap it up. So why does this movie work? Why did the TV show work? And all of these sequels did not. And I think Jay really hit home with it with the whole, you know, world building. This movie was never meant to be taken so seriously. It gave us just what we needed to make it believable. But when you have like the Quickening 2 and the Final Dimension, and they really start to explain this stuff, it really destroys that mythos. So hopefully we'll see that with the reboot, which is in the works with Chad. I cannot say his last name.
Stahelski. The director of John Wick.
Okay. So, I mean, we'll see. What are your guys' thoughts on why this movie works, and what are we looking forward to when it comes to the reboot? Jay, we'll go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's why the movie works. And why the show works, it was able to take its time.
Yeah.
Right? It didn't have to try and cram this mythology into two hours.
Right.
But I think, like I said, I hope he's still on track. It was just a few months ago he mentioned they were doing pre-production stuff during COVID. So it's still on track as far as everything I've read. And having the director of John Wick doing a Highlander, that is just...
Especially with that type of fight
choreography. Absolutely exciting. Yeah. I would say, I think if they rebooted a TV show, I think there's a lot that could be done. And I have maybe different thoughts than the rest of the group. I think the standard of like 20 plus episodes that was kind of standard really even 10 years ago, we've kind of gotten rid of that. And I think it's drastically improved quality because now it's like, oh, we don't have to have all those filler episodes.
Yep, yep.
We can just like focus on the story. And now there's so much funding going in to television. I think even a reboot of a version of the show. Here's the biggest problem I have generally. They should have. Why do they keep calling it Highlander? Right? It was named Highlander, and it's because this dude is from Scotland. They could have like made a sequel and not called it Highlander. And I mean, I think it was the fear. Maybe it wouldn't have worked in 91. It'd work now. You wouldn't have to call it Highlander 2. You could make some name up for the Immortals or whatever. Follow some other dude. Follow some guy from Japan, from feudal Japan, and his adventures through. So I think they...
name was Ramirez. So
yeah, well, there you go.
I'd watch a Ramirez movie for sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, so give me Ramirez Origins.
They were just so hooked on like the name continuity.
Right.
Like, so literally in the animated show, somebody's from Clan MacLeod. From Search for Vengeance, it's a different person from Clan MacLeod. On the TV show, what? These are supposed to be people that are like all over the world, no rhyme or reason. It's not genetic because they can't even reproduce. But they all came from. Yep. So I think an updated TV show could be cool, too, not to take away from the old one. But that's why I think those two things worked.
I think there was a reason that it was so many episodes. I think that was an agreement with USA because they wanted to be competitive with network TV. So they wanted a slate of 26 episodes. I think they even with a budget added on so that they could compete. And like they were trying to start to build their niche of primetime television and reel in audiences because they were getting really big in the 90s, like bringing in WWE, Monday Night Raw and all that stuff like that. So I think that was actually intentional. But you're right, Jay, like now everyone's like, oh, more than 10 episodes. I can't, you know, it's too much commitment.
I think that even USA, they were allowed to have a longer slate because they didn't, you know, their cable, they did not have that prime time, you know, run certain amount of episodes or have a mid season break.
They were literally
given a slate of, hey, you can run it from, you know, August until May and just go all the way through. So But that was 90s. Who knows?
Yeah.
Aaron, anything else you want to add when it says why the movie works, why the sequels don't? Thoughts on the reboot?
Okay. I will just add in this sweet, touching fact that even though Queen would release two other albums with Freddie Mercury after a Kind of Magic, that would be the last album that they were promoting with a concert tour due to his AIDS diagnosis the next year. Mm. So that's the last time that anyone gets to see him in concert is with that, with that concert tour of that album. And then as far as why the movie works, I think we can sometimes nowadays get into a habit where everything needs to be explained to death, time travel, physics, you know, there's mythos, mystical, like magic.
I feel like that was a very intentional Tenet dig.
Oh, it was. All right.
Let's no, wait but for I next do, conversation.
Right. I do think that one of the reasons that you guys pointed out of why it works is because it's not explained to death. And part of the fun in magic is that
it's mystical,
it's mystery, it's the unknown, it's the invisible, it's the trust in the unknowing, right? And I think that when you just kind of rely on that and when you play in that with magic, that it does open up a lot more instead of saying like, well, we got to explain everything. And you see the trouble, obviously, that they get in when they try to explain everything away in the second one. So that's why I think, from based on what you guys are saying and then watching it myself, like the simplicity of it is what allows it to play in its genre as well as it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as the series, like, yeah, I'm open to whatever.
Right.
At this point, I'm not too judgy. So I'm like, you know, I liked Tenet. So I don't know how much they can mess it up where I wouldn't enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? How it can't be that complex.
We got our mic. Like, when does that start?
All right. Let's wrap it up with Larry. Why don't you give us your thoughts? And, you know, why does the movie work, or why does these movies work? And then why do the sequels suck so much as opposed to the TV show? And of course, your thoughts on the reboot.
Well, I first off, I want to agree with Aaron and say that's one. Thank you for the points you're making. Sometimes magic is just magic.
Right.
And sometimes whimsy is just whimsy. And this movie, the first Highlander, it's a fairy tale. It's this whimsical tale of an immortal warrior who's trying to save the earth from eternal darkness. And then finds out that he has even more skin in the game because of the horrific things that the ultimate evil did to his loved ones. And sometimes it's okay to just let magic be magic and go, okay, they cut their heads off and that's why they die. Okay, that he's got a cool scar. Why? Who cares? It's a cool scar. And then he does some safety pins and it looks even cooler. You know, you let it go because they established just enough of a mythology to make you go, all right, I'm in. This seems cool.
Believable.
The reason the sequels don't work is because they kept trying to rewrite the mythology. Instead of letting what worked work, they kept trying to add more, take away, or the other reason, and just from a movie making standpoint, they were like, well, let's capture the magic of the first one. So you kept having the same formula throughout the sequels as the first one. Well, we already saw the first movie. We don't need to see essentially the same movie over and over again with different bad guys. Give us more. And that's why the TV series, minus the first season, which was essentially a rehash of just a longer version of the first movie with a big bad guy who with a big, essentially the Kurgan's cousin, That was Dale Kurgan that we were talking about earlier. Richard Mull as Dale Kurgan.
Dale got into town.
Yep. Dale rolled in and went, "What happened to my cousin?" And then pounded some Bush Lights and went after Duncan MacLeod. But yeah, it works because they have the time to build on the mythology. They build this universe that makes it even richer. And you know, Duncan has his dark times. We see him go through this darkness, this evil, where he has to be brought out of it. We get a Watchers Council, which is funny because right around the same time they introduced the Watchers Council on Highlander, we have Buffy the Vampire Slayer with a Watchers Council. Which, don't get me started on that, because there's some crossover in a lot of our nerdy minds of they're the same people because they're all assholes. But then you get introduced to other immortals, and they explain that, you know, while the Kurgan was supposed to be the last one, and there's this, you know, there can be only one, that was a misunderstanding with what Connor understood. And then so there's more, and there's more created every day, but sometimes they just die. And it just worked because, one, again, once they got past that first season, they were allowed to just start writing and have their own, like, the writers were, it felt like the first season they were told, make the movie, and they did. And then somebody was like, okay, we're going to greenlight the second season, but we need it to be better. And they just started giving them more rein, more freedom. And then they started being able to introduce characters that actually had powers, you know, that, you know, what's all this have, you're gaining powers, what powers? Well, then they start showing powers. And Adrian Paul, quite honest, I Christopher Lambert, from what I understand, is a fantastic actor in French. Adrian Paul, also a Frenchman, but could speak English and is an amazing actor, a very solid actor. I just don't understand why they keep getting these French guys to play Scottish dudes, but it doesn't matter.
He had a weird accent too, and he was like trying to hide it, and I didn't know what was happening when I was watching that, and I was like, oh, I don't know.
He sounds like he's talking in bubbles. Which is fine.
Isn't
it
the
works.
Best though that the French guy plays the Scotsman, and the Scotsman plays an Egyptian Spaniard?
It's great.
That was one of my favorite jokes, though.
Here
I will say
talking
this too
about a movie that deals with Scots for St. Patrick's Day.
I thought that was I was very tickled by that scene where Connery was befuddled by haggis. Like, he's like, "What's that? That's disgusting!" And I'm like, "This is great."
You grew up eating that. You know,
right?
You did.
Yeah.
And what I love is Sean Connery turned down the role of Gandalf because he didn't understand the Lord of the Rings.
He was in Highlander.
But he did Highlander, and then he also did that movie where he wore the little red diaper and the suspenders. But he was
Zardoz.
Like,
yeah.
Yes, thank you. But no, he turns down Gandalf because he doesn't understand it.
And he does Highlander too.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is going to wrap it up for us. We appreciate you hopping on to our show. Larry, what do you got coming up?
We actually just dropped an episode of Convince Me today with Clay Foley. He is a stand-up comic and he's been doing during quarantine, a little a news parody show on clayfoley.com. And it's really funny, about a minute and a half. So that dropped, and I've got a few episodes coming up, and then we're gonna start. Which I know the Front Row is in season 5, but we're gonna start season 2 of Convince Me coming up. And please, when you can, get a shot so we can actually do a live show as always intended for Convince Me, which I know is you know, my big fantasy here.
We'll get there. Thank you, Larry, for stopping by. And I'm sure the gears are turning in Larry's brain to do a Flashback Presents Highlander, the TV show. So maybe be on the lookout for that. I don't know. Aaron, what have we got coming up here on Flashbacks?
With the upcoming Fun Time Tornado season, we got the tornado movie, Twister, for its 25th anniversary. I'm also going to throw this out here. For any of those big Bill Paxton fans, there's an Alien versus Predator Facebook private group that has the funniest memes, and they're like raining love down on Bill Paxton for everything all the time. So if that's something you're interested in, head on over there and check it out.
You're supposed to be plugging the front row, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, us too, but in your other spare time, check out that cool AVP page. And then in the early bits of April, we will be covering Star Trek First Contact for its 25th anniversary as well, where we're actually going to be having the creator and godfather flashback, Scott McFarlane, the OG, bringing his vast Trekkie knowledge back to grace us on the show.
Thank you, Aaron. Jay, what do you got?
We are going to continue to put out episodes of Flashback Presents Cobra Kai. I know we've got some other things filling the space for the moment, but we've got season one and season two breakdown out, and me and Larry will eventually get together and record season three for everybody. But we got time. We got time. We also are going to get the team together to do a full disclosure breakdown on Godzilla versus Kong coming out, which we're all pretty stoked for. And then for award season, we're also going to do a full disclosure of Promising Young Woman, which also has Clancy Brown in it.
Good time. So, is that also because we're like the, you know, we have such strong feelings about female empowerment?
Well, they just said, Jay, will you take the lead on this? And I said, yeah, I know who I'll ask. Flashbacks team, what are you doing?
All right. Well, thank you, Jay. Appreciate that. In addition to that, it is award season. It's right around the corner. Oscar nominations are March 15th. So expect full coverage of all that and extensive breakdown of all things Oscars. We, of course, here at Flashbacks are going to pay homage to the Academy Awards, and we are going to break down the 1991 Best Picture winner, Silence of the Lambs. So that is going to do it for us. I wish we had an Irish influence film that we could talk about, but hey, you got Highlander instead. Just be prepared in 2 years, 1993, Leprechaun. That's going to be a fun one for St. Paddy's Day. But with that, I think it is only appropriate that we end by saying victory for the clan.
Victory for Clan MacLeod.
MacLeod.
I probably just woke quickening. My kid up.
That's all right. We tried. All right, guys, thank you for hopping on, and we will see you later.
Thank you for listening to Front Row Flashbacks, and make sure to tell your friends to check us out. Our pod is on any number of podcast apps, so look us up and please subscribe. While you're at it, if you really dig what we do, please join us as a full-time patron. Our Patreon link is in the show notes, and we would love for you to give us your money. I mean, to be a part of the team.
And be sure to look up the Front Row Network for any of our other content, like Front Row Classics, with hosts Brandon Davis and Eric Flick. Hold on a minute. We've got a guy on this podcast with the last name Flick.
He legally changed it for the show because that's the dedication we bring people at the Front Row Network.
Well, that's amazing, and just as amazing as some of our other shows, such as Guilty Pleasures, hosted by Lou Hare, and our Beyond the Mouse crew that covers all things Disney and so much more.
In short, we have something for everyone at the Front Row Network. Make sure you find the Front Row Network on Facebook and subscribe to our main feed on Spotify or whatever you use to access your podcast. We can also be found on NPR Illinois' website under Community Voices. And you can follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. For the Front Row Flashbacks, this has been Ryan Lutens,
Jay Hoffman,
and Aaron McCabe.
And we will see you all in the front row.